Are you ready for some oversharing? Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the best darn show on the internet, the Oversharing Show. I am joined today by my lovely co-host, namesake of the show, Sharon. And we are doing a solo episode, which always means the two of us, because we don't want it to be the Over Brandon Show. We already discussed that last week. So anyway, Sharon's going to open the show today with a quote, and then I am going to pull a card from the Influence of Angels tarot deck.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So the quote today is, it says, spirituality does not come from religion. It comes from our soul. We must stop confusing religion and spirituality. Religion is a set of rules, regulations, and rituals created by humans, which were supposed to help people spiritually. Due to human imperfection, religion has become corrupt, political, divisive, and a tool for power struggle. Spirituality is not theology or ideology. It is simply a way of life, pure and original, as given by the Most High. Spirituality is a network linking us to the Most High, the universe, and each other. By Haile Selassie I.
Amazing. Or maybe Haile Selassie I.
Yeah.
We're not quite sure, everybody, but that's all right. The words are still pretty amazing. And the reason why we wanted to use that quote today was because we're going to be talking about a lot of the differences and a lot of things that are that affect the cosmology that Sharon and I share, although we don't have the same exact cosmology. I'm sure it's very, very similar, though. I can't talk. And so without any further ado, though, unless you want to say something about the quote.
No, I really like, well, since you asked, I do like the quote because it resonates with me. I came out of, I suppose, religion, and we've talked about this in multiple episodes about coming out of a place of feeling like you have these rules and these things that you have to follow. And so it was about 2020 that it started to happen, but over the last few years I've done the whole wipe the slate clean and started from scratch to develop my cosmology and decide and make discernment on what it is that makes sense to me and what resonates with me. So that is why I like that quote.
Yeah, 100%. I came out of religion myself just a lot more years ago. You know, I went to a Catholic school, and in the midst of that, from kindergarten to eighth grade, I went to a Catholic school. And somewhere around third or fourth grade, my mom got involved in a born again church. It was a Pentecostal Assemblies of God church, speaking in tongues and all that stuff. And I really got into it, really got into the Bible. And I've said this before, you know, I like would sometimes hang out with the adults in Bible study and just really loved it. And I saw myself as trying to spread this message to the world. And I think it's funny because that's kind of what we do here in the Oversharing Show. I mean, maybe not to the entire world yet. There's time, though. But I feel like anyone who is interested finds the show and the people that watch the show, which shout out to the chat right now. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. People that resonate with it find it, and it's great because they feel like they're not alone, and they've probably had a lot of these questions that we've actually had too, and now we come across people that have these questions just as we had them. So we like to break it down in a way where we could, and that brings us to the card that I pulled because our journeys made us both stars.
The star.
The star card. Or as they would say in Atlantic City, the store cord. Because in one of the casinos, their membership card is called the star card. And I never realized it until I got into tarot that I was like, oh my God, that's crazy. But anyway, the star card, number 17. Like, how's that dolphin? That's like a shout out to Gabe right there. I should wish we pulled that card.
Oh, how funny. Yeah.
And then you have the lady with the stars dripping down to the water, as above, so below. The dolphins jumping out of the water, trying to perhaps glimpse the majesties of the heavens, even if just for a few seconds, while it jumps into the air out of the water.
What were your thoughts on the star card for the place in Atlantic City, would you say?
So every casino has like a player's card that you get, and every time you gamble, you put it in, you get points, and you could like use it for things to buy in the casino. But it was just kind of mind blowing because I see a lot of symbolism everywhere, and it seems to be used as this unconscious language. Most times it's, you know, even when you're creating a logo, because I remember talking to people in businesses about creating logo and graphic design people, and a lot of times they do use symbolism. They said, yeah, it kind of just attracts people. And I think they're using it in like an innocent way, but other people might use it in a nefarious way. But the fact that they call it the star card, and so many people aren't really aware of maybe tarot or not making that connection, but they're still drawn in and they still have it in their pocket. They're like, I'm a star. I got my star card, baby. I would suggest carrying this one more than a one from a casino. Although I do enjoy playing poker, so I'm not going to demonize casinos. But most things in the casino aren't in your favor. If you are skilled at poker, poker can be, the odds can be in your favor. So that's why I enjoy it. It's kind of like chess, but then you can win or lose money as well. But yeah, so the first thing we wanted to talk about today, after we got through our quotes and card, was that how awesome our show is and how amazing it is. And, you know, it's really just because I obviously,
but that's not to put us on a pedestal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're getting there. The reason I say that all the time, and Sharon agrees, is obviously because it's our show. And what we just talked about before with both of our journeys through religion and different belief systems, now we get to, and like government stuff and law stuff and like birthing and all this stuff. It's not just cosmology, but it, you could just say the entire existence as a man and woman, you know, like the realm earth, what the realm could be. All this stuff is what highly interests us. And we get to break it down in a way where we could observe it and not judge things. Well, we, you know, obviously we're not perfect, and that's what we want. That's what we're doing this message right now for. We don't want people to think we're perfect. And like Sharon said, put us on a pedestal, but we're just sharing all this stuff from an angle where we're not really judging it. We're just trying to take it in and see what works and take the best and leave the rest. And I think what happens sometimes to different shows, or this even happens like with governmental leaders or demagogues and all this stuff, is that they start out doing a really good thing, and then they get put on a pedestal by so many people. And then you get this co-option of what the original message was and everything, and it all gets messed up, and then people start fighting, and it's just more division, which would be so ironic for the Oversharing Show to cause division, because all we do is rail against it. So we just wanted to put out a message to everybody to not put us on a pedestal, everybody. I mean, obviously this is like tongue-in-cheek comedy, you know, but serious too. The stuff that we talk about, we don't think we're like masters or better than anybody because we found this out. We just found this stuff that helps us in our life. It helps us not to be victims of all this crazy stuff that goes on in the world. And we just like to share it with people and have a good time. So yeah, we're always telling people, know thyself. So don't worry about me and Sharon and how awesome we are. I mean, we are awesome, but what about you? You're an awesome person too. And I'm talking to anyone who's listening to this. You're part of the creation. You're part of God's plan. You know, no matter what you may think, all the programming that happens to us to make us think we're worthless, the voices in the back of our head that tell us, you know, just the voices that we're telling Sharon, oh, you'll never be good enough to podcast. You know, you won't be, you'll just be nervous and it'll suck. You know, I had those voices when I first started too, but I was just like, fuck you, voices in my head, I'm doing this. You know, and so Sharon also, once I got her to record a couple times, she was kind of infected and bit by the bug and excited about it. So she continued to do it, and we created the Oversharing Show. And, but anybody can do it. That's what we're trying to say. And not everybody obviously is meant to be a podcaster. Everybody has their own way to create art in this world. And I feel like if you find a way to create your art, despite the voices in your head, because they might never go away. It's kind of like your intuition, which we're going to talk about later. And I wrote about this in an upcoming book, where you have to cultivate your intuition, right? That voice is always there, I think, that intuitional voice, but sometimes we could push it away or somehow not pay attention to it. The same thing, I think, with the egoic voices, they're still going to be there. They're still going to tell you little things that can happen or when you could fail. But it's actually a good thing, I think, if you look at it in the proper way, because if you are going into a situation where there's danger, that voice can actually help you, right? But it's the overuse of that voice that then you become some kind of slave to, like a voice in your own head, and you stop yourself. It's just like when I started doing stand-up comedy, it took me till the age of about 37 to start. And most of it was because I was afraid to go on stage. And the first time I was on stage at an open mic, I was like shaking, looking down at my notes, just like reading them, you know. And then I just kept doing it and doing it and doing it. And now, I mean, I haven't really performed it probably in about 2 years or so, but I could easily just get on a stage and at least talk. You know, I might not have funny things to say or maybe make everyone laugh, but I can get up there and not be nervous because of that. So, and something that I read a book about stand-up before I started doing it. And something the author wrote is that a lot of people think that creators or performers that do this overcome their fear and they feel no fear. And it's like, no, they do it in spite of the fear. They still have the fear, but they'll still go on and go past it. And it reminds me of the Dune quote, the litany of fear, which we're always talking about. You know, it's like, I will move on despite my fear. Fear is the mind killer, all that kind of stuff. But the fear is still there and you can use it. It's like a temperature gauge, right? But instead of, it's like, imagine fear as a thermometer and you wake up and you look at it and you see that it's like 20 degrees outside Fahrenheit, you know, it's really cold and you just get mad at the thermometer and you're like freaking out and you just want to destroy the thermometer. That would be like wanting to destroy your fears. You could just step back and realize that the fear is just a gauge that you can read the situation that's going on, and you could take that information and not let it overwhelm you. You know, it's 20 degrees out, but you still got to go to work. So you'll get up and you dust off your car because it just snowed, and you start it up and you go despite all that. It's the same kind of thing. You know, a lot of times we'll say have no fear and don't fear and fear is bad. But the more I think about it, and I think we've talked about this, you're still going to have the fear. So don't feel bad if you have the fear. It's going with it. You know, fear is just this natural response.
Using it as a tool.
Exactly. Using it as a tool, just like we said. So there's about many other things, right? We talk about the tarot being a tool, all these, the Bible being a tool, all these different things. It's just, it's if you put it on a pedestal or a pit, it comes to that, right? So if you put the fear on a pit in the pit and you hate it, it's probably going to be detrimental to you as well. So we just wanted to give that little fun tongue in cheek. So don't worship us, guys. All right. Don't put us on a pedestal, even though, I mean, I know, look at this beautiful hair, my voice, you know, you're like this giant, he needs to be put on a pedestal and fed grapes. Don't do it to me. And don't throw me in the pit either. I mean, you could do whatever you want. I'm just saying.
It's if you not do, gonna beware.
Yeah.
People fall off pedestals. You know, somebody will say something and do something that you realize, oh, I don't like that about that person. And then now you're upset because they fell off the pedestal that you put them on. And now you're upset. It does, you know, it just doesn't do anybody any good. But to add to what you were saying about us sharing our experiences, once we came to the point where you and I done plenty of like one, just you and me episodes, like solo episodes with us, we started adding guests, getting people to bring their experiences. It kind of evolved into a sharing their spiritual journeys, sharing their cosmologies, how they arrived there, because every person experiences life differently. Everyone goes through different circumstances. So we're not saying that we arrived anywhere Yes, we have arrived at some conclusions. And because of our experiences, we want to share those. But we're not the only ones, you know. So we brought people on to share theirs. And you can make the decision on what you decide makes sense for you. Use your discernment and come to your own conclusions. We're not telling people what to believe, how to believe. We're just sharing how we've arrived at our conclusions so far, how we've arrived at our cosmology. I'm open to the fact that it could change. I don't expect it to change that much because I feel like I drastically, wiped the slate clean so that I was able to come to much more solid foundations and conclusions. So I don't expect it to change much, but there could be something that is a revelation to me someday that then makes me change my view on something else. But yeah, that's all I wanted to say about that.
Yeah, I think that comes from like what we just said, not putting your own cosmology on a pedestal and thinking it's better than everybody else's, because then you're constantly having to defend it. And what we say is the truth needs no defense. So if it's true, it'll all come out in the wash. And if we're wrong, hopefully we figure it out and we could adjust from there and we don't have to keep making the same mistakes. And something I was going to say about if you put me on a pedestal earlier, it reminds me of the scene in Lord of the Rings. I know it's weird that I make a Lord of the Rings reference. Where Frodo offers the ring to Galadriel. And Galadriel says, if you give me the ring in place of a cruel tyrant, meaning Sauron, in place of an evil dark master, you'd have a beautiful queen. And she just like goes into this evil, crazy queen, that'll destroy and, wreak havoc and everyone will bend to me. It really reminds me of that, because giving her the ring is kind of like putting her on a pedestal and giving her the ultimate power, right? Giving her the ultimate power over your own choice. You just give it to somebody else. Like you see a lot in religions and different dogmatic things.
Holy smokes. Wow.
It's the same thing. That's why, guys, I know you love me and you think I'm great, but I'm not perfect. And if enough people put me on a pedestal, no matter what I tried, I might turn into, this crazy person. I mean, it's not saying I would, but it just the idea of that. And I think that's also highlighted well in the Dune series with Paul Atreides, because he, if you watch the movie or see
fall prey to that? I haven't read it.
He doesn't fall prey personally, but after he takes the power and wins the fight that in the movie. And I don't know, I haven't really watched the movies, but after the part where he gets the Fremen together and takes over and knocks out the Emperor and all that stuff. After that, this jihad is unleashed on the entire universe and all these Fremen go out fighting in his name and basically going to all these planets and killing people and putting them under his rule. But there's really nothing he can do to stop it. It's really amazing. So,
holy smokes.
We don't want to overshare in jihad, even though that's the terrible use of that word jihad, because that's jihad is really about an inner battle, Anyway, so it's funny how these words, right? We're going to talk about that too, about how words affect people. So that's just something we want to say in the beginning and kind of give you guys a little brief overview of what the Oversharing Show started as and what it is now. It's like that meme we talked about, like how it started, how it's going, We should make a meme and put our first one up, like how it started, and then put a picture of like this art, like how it's going.
I don't know what the memes would, what the pictures would entail, though.
Yeah, it'd be like us starting like all nice and smiley, and then we'd be like, and the other picture's like, the realm, man, we're energy, dude. all right. So we talked about what our show is about, and let's see, where are these notes? Okay, so one of the things that we wanted to talk about is we get a question, and a lot of people have this question. It's like about good versus evil and stuff like that. And, we're not trying to create another religion or a set of beliefs here on the Oversharing Show, the Church of Oversharing. I mean, that's just that would go against everything we believe in. So, you know, we're, like we said, we're just making observations like blind men in a room feeling an elephant. We're all going to have a different explanation of what we feel. You know, like, I hope I have the trunk. That's my joke. Like, I'm holding something here. It's the elephant. I know it's his trunk. It's dark in here. I really hope it's his trunk. That's a elephant dick joke, everybody. That was, anyway, see the silly humor we bring here to the Oversharing Show. But the way that, you know, so a lot of people talk about like relative truth and absolute truth and good. Is there really good? Is there really evil? These people are evil. There's good and evil. And Sharon and I have been having discussions about this. And what we came up with is that I think there's different levels of perception of this. This goes kind of like we were talking about with the different words like jihad. The English language is crazy because I have this picture in my head and I'm trying to describe it to people. And I'm using these words of the English language, but these words are so interchangeable that they can mean different things to somebody else. So it creates a different picture in someone else's head. And it's a way that they're kind of misunderstanding what I'm saying. And this happens all the time. I've watched it happen my whole life. I just never realized it or been able to enunciate it until now. So what we're going to do is try to dig into the nitty gritty and explain exactly what we mean by all these things. And I've said this like a lot about words, and this is why I prefer symbols, because symbolism is a way for people to get their own interpretation and get something out of it without having to speak words, you know? So yeah. Anyway,
that works for people who are prone to that. I'm like way more logical. So for me, I feel like words are more helpful sometimes.
Oh yeah. No, words could be.
I'm just telling you, because like even like tarot has been difficult for me. I really have to like practice and I don't practice that often, so I don't know all the cards or anything like that. But like, yeah, I have to do it enough to get the feel for the symbolism and what the archetypes are and what they mean and stuff like that. So, but
oh, yeah.
I hear what you're saying.
100%. And, you know, I had another show, which we're probably going to start doing it again. I think I've been talking to my great friend, Ashley. It's called The Terrible Podcast, TarotBull.com. Check it out. We covered every single card in the deck for at least an hour and a half. And no problem. But it was, for me, it was good because it was basically like a self-teaching learning course, right? To learn all this stuff. And I guess what I should have said about symbols versus words, a claim I could probably make, is symbols are maybe a better way to preserve knowledge and pass it down because they're harder to corrupt. Not that you can't corrupt symbols, but the corruption of symbols usually happens when you invert them, you know, like a pentagram, and everyone thinks it's evil and it's the devil and stuff. But then you could look at maybe another representation of the pentagram, which just means, you know, you have the five-pointed star upside down. So you have the four elements above spirit, which is the top one. And then when you turn it the other way, you have that point, which is spirit on top, in its proper place for everything to be in harmony and balance, I guess. But to have a true balance, I guess you have to have it go both ways, right? It's like a yin and yang situation. So I think symbols are a better way because it's less corruptible. I mean, look at the Bible, how many people have used it to control people and to corrupt people and stuff like that. Or again, those people allow themselves to be corrupted. So it's not like we're...
no one's forcing anyone.
We're not getting into victim here, but yeah. So the first thing we want to talk about were that with the whole good and evil thing, right? I think there's different levels of perception, and that's what gets people tripped up. And until recently, I haven't really been able to enunciate this in a way that makes sense to more people. Well, we're hoping this makes sense to more people, but I think it's good to look at these concepts in two different ways. One way would be the physical and one's the spiritual. So it's basically the seen and the unseen, or esoteric and exoteric, or external and internal. So the external is the physical world and the internal is the spiritual world. For sake of argument, we're not like defining terms absolutely here. This is just for our sake of explaining it. This is what we came to believe. So the physical the exterior, that's the esoteric. The spiritual, the inner, that's the esoteric. And I wrote a great blog post about that. You could check out on morelawsmoreproblems.com in about 2019 or so. So go read that. Maybe we'll put a link below if you want further clarification on that subject between what esoteric and exoteric the differences are. So if you look at good and evil on the physical plane, or there's two different things, right? Something happens out in the world. Somebody kills somebody. Somebody does something maliciously and hurts somebody. You could say that's evil in the physical realm, right? Because in the physical realm, we're thinking about the golden rule and treating others the way we want to be treated, because in the physical, we're interacting with others. In the spiritual, it's really just internal, so it's ourselves. But spoiler alert, it does connect to everybody because we have this collective consciousness that we're dealing with. And I think that is kind of a symptom of the fact that when some people say we are all one, we're just all one, you know, I think that's kind of what that's hinting at. And when we say we're all one, what we mean is
in the spiritual realm,
in the unseen, in the non-physical. So here in the physical, we incarnate to have this lovely experience so we can
be individuals and experience each other
and have free will, right? So we can experience all these things in the physical, all these trials and tribulations and even great times, this back and forth swing of the pendulum, the good times and the bad times, and it affects everything that we do. But on the spiritual plane, I feel that we are all part of the same energy, the same whatever it is. We are all one. Now, that's the spiritual way to look at it. The physical way to look at it, if you're looking at something spiritually like that tenant, but from a physical mind frame, I think that's where the New Age comes in. And that's where the New Age gets you, because they'll say, oh, yeah, we're all one. You know, just sit around and meditate all day. Everything's great. You don't have to do anything. Everything's perfect. Peace and love and all that. Where I think if you take that mindset of everything's okay, peace and love, and you put it internally, and when you see things happen in the external world, you have this internal, you know, castle, you call it, this structure of strength. And you know that no matter what happens, God has a plan for it. He created it all. There's some reason it's happening. Now, this doesn't mean that in the physical realm, you don't have to fight against somebody who's trying to hurt you, or defend yourself, or stick up for somebody.
Or even condone behavior that is against the golden rule.
Exactly. But in the spiritual,
you can forgive that person, because forgive them for they know not what they do.
Yes. And to break that down, great point, Sharon. And to break that down to its essence, all that means is that you're not viewing yourself as a victim to what's going on in the physical internally. Even if you're a victim of somebody coming to rob your house and trying to murder you and, you know, all these terrible things, you could defend yourself. But like we always say, you don't have to get in a rage about it. You don't have to get mad. You could think to yourself, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And I think that in the story, in the Bible, the story where Jesus dies, and that's his last thought when he dies, I think that whoever wrote that, or whatever that was, whoever wrote that down and wanted to either remember it or whatever, make that a huge point. I think that because it was at the point of his physical death, we should really take a look at that. And it's like a valuable lesson. It's like a parable hidden in there, you know? So if you can look at everything, even at the point of death, where you're not blaming other people for it, you just see it all as God's plan internally. You could still be fighting for your life on the outside in the external, right? I think that is the proper way to distinguish it and to explain what we're talking about. And maybe hopefully people will get what we're saying. So let me just check. Go ahead. If you have something to say, I was going to check the notes.
No, I think the next topic would be the natural law and the golden rule and using that as a guide.
Yeah. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Well, so even like the Bible will talk about how you're born with this internal knowing of right from wrong. And if we look at Romans, I'll read the quote in Romans 2:15. It says, they show that the essential requirements of the law are written in their hearts, and their conscience, which is their sense of right and wrong, their moral choices, bearing witness, and their thoughts alternately accusing or perhaps defending them. So that's basically saying, you know, inside of you, your internal, you know when you've done something wrong because you feel it. You may defend yourself. You may say, no, that's not what I was doing. That's not what I was thinking. You may gaslight people and tell them, no, you're wrong about me. That's not what I was doing. But you know, internally, you know that you did something with an intention that was perhaps negative, shall we say. So you know, and the Bible even says it, that you're born with this internal knowing. So that natural law, that golden rule, is literally written in your heart, which means it's basically baked into your consciousness, your conscience too, you know.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like when people are out there in the physical, living their life, and they are going against the golden rule a whole bunch, there's this still this voice inside that might be telling them, like their inner conscious and their intuition, you know, tell them not to do these things or whatever, or maybe try something else or all this stuff. But because of their focus on the external, they're kind of ignoring this internal voice, and it becomes a lot quieter. As like I was saying earlier, and then the opposite could be true too. If you're too focused internally, you could not be listening to your ego, and something can happen to you because you don't realize a car is coming down the street because you're too far in your head and you get hit by a car or something like that, you know? So I think it really is a balance. And that kind of brings me to what karma is, because this is another thing I wrote an article about years ago about karma, because I feel like the mainstream understanding of karma is a direct cause and effect. Like, you know, say if Sharon goes out and she's a meanie to a bunch of people and does all this thing, that all these bad things are going to happen back to her.
Someone's going to be mean back to me at some other future point.
Yeah, like if you steal someone's bike, someone's going to steal your bike or something like that. And I think that's more of the physical revenge side of it, right? People are like, yeah, they get their proper comeuppance and they have to deal with what I went through and how dare they. But I think more the way that karma works, or this, you know, people have labeled it karma, is that the way I described it in my article was it's kind of like a pond, and somebody tosses a stone and now you have waves. And so everything is going to be affected. And then those waves are going to be affected by other waves, and things are just going to keep going back and forth until it kind of settles and it's all calm again. So I don't think it's directly a direct cause and effect, but I think what happens is when you're living not in accordance with the golden rule, that you're on a lower vibration. And when you're on this low vibration, I think your behavior is affected by it also. You know, you kind of just go along. It's like evacuating your cockpit. I've heard of that before, where you don't take personal responsibility for things around you. You kind of just let things happen to you, and you're going along kind of blindfolded in life to all these other things. So you might attract all these negative things to you because you're in this negative state. And we're just feeling an elephant and trying to describe it, but I feel like that's how this realm works. It's not a direct cause and effect, but you're still causing the problems and things that are happening to you because of your vibration, because of your own actions and your own views on yourself. So I feel like, if you know that, and then you start living in accordance with the golden rule, and the only way to really do it is, I mean, yeah, you could try to be a tyrant to yourself and get mad and punish yourself and judge yourself when you don't live up to your own standards of following the golden rule. But what's really worked for me is doing bad things, right? Evil, quote unquote, bad things, until I was just sick of them, until I realized that it wasn't the answer. I was just trying to fill this hole that I had in my soul or whatever with all these random sexual experiences with women until I got to a point where it wasn't enough. And I know I've talked to many addicts that say the same thing, drugs or, you know, whatever, sports or gambling or all these things. I mean, I guess sports, but, you know, like gambling and all this stuff.
Whatever escapism of your choice.
Pick. Yeah. I mean, it could really be anything, any kind of escapism. You do it until you realize that it's just not doing it for you anymore. It's not fulfilling. It's not scratching that itch. And then you have this moment of clarity where you're like, oh my God, I was wrong. And that's the key. So when you admit you were wrong and you really feel in your soul, in my case anyway, I wanted then to not do that bad behavior anymore. And sometimes I had to fight against certain things, but I always said to myself, like, you know, this is, even to this day, I'll see like a woman walking down the street that's attractive. And I'll just think to myself, like, even if we talk and we hook up and all this stuff, like, it's not going to lead anywhere. It's just going to lead to a dead end and me being like, ah, fuck, not again, you know, like one of those things. So now I'm choosing to happily, I'm happily choosing to walk the golden rule. I keep wanting to say the golden path because that's in Dune. The golden funny. Path. Yeah. The God Emperor.
The golden path is following the golden rule.
Yeah. Well, the way that they use it though, it's a lot different, but anyway, yeah, it's still funny, but I keep wanting to say it because So me desiring to walk the path of the golden rule, it comes from me. That's what I want to do now. You know, I like actively want to do it. So there's none of this denial or, none of this wondering why. And I feel like sometimes you have to go back into it. I know it's funny because Ram Dass tells this story. And again, we don't put anybody on a pedestal. We just take what we like and leave the rest. But he tells the story of how he was a vegetarian for a very long time. And then he realized he was just being phony with it. Like he was using it like
as
he was
a way
better
to
than
elevate himself. Maybe think his ego like, oh, I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah. Oh, look at these idiots eating. I'm a vegetarian. I'm not causing any harm. So he just like went to this Chinese restaurant and ate a bunch of spare ribs. So I think sometimes. Right. Yeah. And then he bumps into this guy who was admiring the way that Ram Dass kind of like blessed his food and showed thanks. And he was asking him all this stuff. And then he was like, what's your diet like? He asked Ram, like, what? And then he was like sitting there in front of all these like bones from the spare ribs, like,
yeah, I'm a vegetarian deciding to eat meat again for the first time just to break my vegetarian ego.
Yep. He was like, you're looking at it like this is what I eat now. But I think that is important. It highlights a very important thing, which is sometimes you're not done. You got to do it till it's done. And again, it's not like we're telling people to go out and do bad things, but
some people's escapism is like drinking too much coffee. Like that was my escapism. So I was spending all this money on going to the coffee shop every day. This was like several years ago. And because I was escaping something that I didn't want to face, I was running away from these feelings of discomfort in the relationship I had. And so my way of escape was to go to a coffee shop, order a drink and have my, and that was my, like, that's my thing. That's what I do. There's nothing wrong with this. You know, I can have my guilty pleasure. I'm just drinking coffee. But yeah, I had to do that till I was done with it and face whatever it was I needed to face.
Exactly.
Which took years.
1,000%. And now you realize what it is. So you could still go enjoy some coffee if you want, but you don't have to get wrapped up in it or defend it or say, you know, coffee's not bad or just get encamped and involved in all this division because of it. You know, you learned your lesson and you realized you were wrong and you moved on.
And now I only drink 3 to 4 ounces a day and I'm cool. Like it doesn't, I'm cool with it. I just like the flavor.
Yeah.
But something you were saying earlier about the like being in a lower vibration just reminds me of some of the stuff that we've talked about before. But like when you're in this like low vibe spiritually, right? Because we're spiritual beings wrapped up in this like 3D body, right?
Allegedly.
Physical body. Allegedly. So you're your vibration, your energy because you are energy is how I see things, will affect the people around you and the things around you. So could it be that because of your low vibe, you will attract the negative energy to you? So negative circumstances will happen upon you because you're having this negative vibe. And maybe it's to wake you up from the negative vibe that you're having, so that you notice, maybe you notice.
Yeah.
And maybe you look at it and say, oh, because people always ask, why did this happen? Right? Like I do that. If something happens, now whenever something in my body is like off, like, oh, my shoulder or my neck or my leg or my head, I now start looking at it as, okay, the chakras, and like, I don't have a lot of info on this, but I have the card that Eileen McCusick made of the body, the biofield, and like where in the body, what things mean for like where, when things are not going right in the body. So I'll think of that and I'll just be like, what in that area is causing something? Like, I think your left shoulder is like sadness and grief and loss. So if your left shoulder's hurting, maybe you've experienced that and you're not acknowledging it. You're not letting it go in a good way. Maybe you're holding it back or something. But like, that's how I look at things now when something happens in my body or whatever. And I'm like, okay, what am I not noticing that I need to notice, that I need to address? So I see things like that too with something happening. Like if, like one time I was like, this was before I met Cody, but like a couple of years ago, I was talking to this dude and, I was talking to him on like FaceTime type thing. And I was washing dishes and I dropped a glass, and I never drop stuff and break it. Like, that's just not something that happens. So to me, it was like probably telling me this guy's not good, like what's going on. And the crazy thing was, like, within days of that happening, the whole thing just fell apart. Like the whole, whatever it was that we were trying to maybe be in a relationship or something, but whatever was going on there just fell apart, never materialized, because there was a lot of negative energy there with that person. And so like when I dropped that glass, that to me was like, what are you doing? What's going on? Like, but at the time I didn't see it. It was only after that had ended that I went back and looked and thought to myself, that never happens. I never do that. Like, so that was like a wake up. Like, so whenever something like that happens now, I think, okay, why did this happen? I don't do it in a, sometimes we want to do it in a very like victim-y way, right? But I try to not do that. I'm like, okay, don't be victim. Like, but why did this happen? Because clearly something like this happened. God's trying to tell me something. What is God trying to tell me? So even if I have to cry it out and be like, God, what are you, please show me, what are you trying to tell me with what just happened? Because it doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel good. Anyway, That was a side story that I never meant to talk about. Sorry.
No, that was great. That was perfect, because I think a lot of that, it goes back to what we're saying about the vibrations and these little signs that happen in our life. And if you start to read the signs, I think that's kind of the positive use of divination or whatever, right? Whereas if you're trying to figure out the lotto numbers or the future and all this stuff for your own personal gain, that's where it could go negative, but it'll work. It'll still work for you, perhaps, you know, could it be?
But it'll lead you down more
like escapism, right? But instead you sit back, and it's like if you were a mariner years ago and you didn't have like Doppler radar to tell you if there was going to be a storm, you'd look at the signs, you know, are all the animals like burrowing and hiding right now? Like, what's going on? Does everything just seem a little, it's calm, but it just seems a little off?
Quiet? Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a storm coming now? You know, it's the same kind of thing. And I think dropping a glass like that is perfect, especially if it's something you don't normally do. Now, I always knock things over, so that might not be a sign for me, but that's why we're individuals. And when you get to know yourself, then you know the signs. You know, there's different signs that I have. I might see an owl, perhaps, like I did the other day.
Yeah.
You know, these
look up what that means.
Yeah, they could all it's all signs. You know, I know what it was. It was the owl going, dude, your show is the shit. And I'm like, owl, listen. You know, he was like, your show
stop
is
putting
awesome.
Me
like,
on a pedestal, owl.
Exactly. Owl. I'm just flesh and blood. I mess up too. It's funny. It's fine. Get to know yourself, owl. No. So yeah, no, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I think it's very relevant to what we're talking about and stuff. And you know, every person has their own journey, right? And draws their own conclusions. That's something we wrote in the notes, and I think it's applicable right now. It's so, so true. But we're basically just describing our own journeys too, and maybe you can glean something from it. You know, a lot of people that watch this show, I feel like they know about these things and they have an idea of it. But I feel like us reiterating it and talking about it could explain it to new people, and then also validate other people who are feeling the same way. So it's great. But
one thing I wanted to add just before we move on to the next topic is how I've come to see things and how I use for myself, in trying to explain as well to others, but how I use natural law or the golden rule, however you want to say it, as like a dividing line. That's like my measure of, you know, when people say, is it good or is it evil? And of course, we're still speaking of the physical realm, right? But I also see that intention, like your intention is the key. And the intention is your spiritual, right? It's like that comes from your spirit. Like, are you intentionally being wishing harm upon someone? I mean, it doesn't even have to be that. It could just be that you're being maybe avoidant or something. Like, for example, if I say something to someone, if I say it to them with my intention to help them, it's different than if I say it with an intention to make myself feel better. So sometimes this can even like how you say it carries your intention too. But it really is the golden rule. You can apply it outside by like, okay, because the natural law, the golden rule is kind of like if you harm someone, right? If you do harm to someone else. But harm isn't necessarily just like physically hitting someone or stealing their property. It could also be like an intention when you say something to them. Because like even Jesus said, like that it comes from the intentions of your heart. Like if you, he said something to the effect of like, yeah, you maybe didn't sleep with this woman, right? But in your heart, you already desired to sleep with her. So you've already done that right here in your mind. So it's the intention. And so that's like the spiritual side of it. So you can apply the golden rule physically and spiritually, but the spiritual part comes from your intention, like your free will, kind of like your free will outside is the external, on the internal is like your intention. So like, I just thought of that right now. So I haven't fleshed it out, but that's how I see it right now.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think the other side of that coin would be applying the golden rule internally is, are you acting like a victim? You know, that's the other side of free will that we talk about so much, which is simply your choice how you're going to feel about something in the moment when it happens. You know, I was listening to Rodney Norman, my friend and comedian Rodney Norman, this morning. He was doing a live and he was talking about, because people were asking him how he maintains like an optimistic kind of view. And he says, he's like, you know, when something happens to me, he's like, I don't view it as good or evil. I just view it as something that happened. And then I, you know, I don't ask myself why this happened. I just say, oh, this happened. Now, what can I do? Or what can it show me? Or, you know, all these questions that he asks. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't go into a victim narrative in his head, which I really like. And I think that is super important. And it's a gift that we're given, this free will. So why not use it? And why not use it in a way where we don't look like victims? You know, because if you think about the golden rule, do not do unto others as you would have done yourself. And then also do not do unto others. You know, you wouldn't want people out there acting like a victim around you. So why would you act like a victim to yourself? Did I say that right? That makes sense, right?
Something like that.
You guys get it. If you've been watching long enough, you know the way I scat. I'm just scatting everybody. it's something I was listening in the show because we're recording this right after our woodshop episode, Woodshop the Wise streamed. And I was speaking and I was talking about, I don't remember what it was, but I'll think of it. And then I remember saying it and I'm like, oh, that came across great. And then listening to it, I'm like, oh, I was kind of scatting in the middle there. So, you know, guys, read between the lines, you'll get it. But that's the cool thing about having a show, too, is because every week we could talk about these things and flush them out even more, especially this new idea that Sharon just popped up. And let me tell you, she's pretty strict by the notes. So when she freestyles, I love it. We're just freestyling, everybody.
Yeah, we're freestyling.
Yeah, but thank you for sharing that, because I think that's very important stuff about the way you view this golden rule internally and in the intentions, because, you know, they do say the path to hell is paved with good intentions. But I feel like what you're talking about gets you around that, because it's not really about good or bad intentions. It's more about true or false intentions, you know. Right? Are you truly going by what your heart's telling you, or are you going along with what you think you should do to save everybody when you should be looking in the mirror, maybe, right? And saving yourself, perhaps. And that kind of brings us neatly to our next topic, which we're going to talk about: truth. What is the truth? I once heard somebody define truth by saying the only thing that you can actually point at to true truth is things that have happened, because they've already happened, so they're true, right? But even that stuff, open any history book and you could see how that gets distorted with words, right? But what we're talking about, though, mostly with truth is, just like we said before about the perception with the physical and the spiritual, one person's truth could be different from another person's truth. It's just because on the physical realm, when things happen, people are going to base what they believe on is true by all the experiences, everything that's ever happened to them, and their memories and what they've been through.
Your memory can fault, like just like we talked about in the Mandela effect episode, like your memory can fail you and you'll remember something differently than someone else remembered it. Like even when people, when you have officers, policy enforcers going to the scene of a car accident, they're like, well, who was doing what? Everybody sees something different and notes and writes something different down. So that is their perception. And to them, it's true. They don't think they're lying. And it's not lying, because that is what they saw. That's what they remember they saw. So how can you tell someone that they're lying when they're just telling you what they saw, right?
And it's they're expressing their perception of what they saw. So you're exactly right. And I'm glad that you brought that up about memory, because I was hiking the other day and I was with my wonderful woman and we were talking about dreams, and something hit me about dreams, because if something happens in the past, an experience, you have this memory. But what if you have unconscious dreams about that, too, that might mingle in with that memory? And then you're not exactly sure what happened, because I know sometimes a lot of dreams could be very lifelike. And then if you don't consciously remember that dream, it could seep into your conscious memory and perhaps alter it. And then you got a Mandela effect, and all of a sudden we're running around with the Berenstain Bears.
Absolutely. And the crazy thing about that is I was talking to people about that recently, like within the last several months, how some people will ask me, have you ever been on an air balloon? And I'm just like, I think I have, but I'm not sure. Like, I have this like vague memory that I've been on a hot air balloon, but like, I don't have any pictures, or like, I don't know how old I was. You know what I mean? And I'm like, did I dream that I was? Did it really happen? I don't know. I don't.
Or was it a past life? And-
right.
by saying that, I could clarify what I was saying on the woodshop episode, which is this crazy topic. That's another division, is reincarnation. You know, some people think we have one life, we live it, we die, that's it. Some people think we live multiple lives. My idea is a little more nuanced, where I, again, going back to the spiritual, where we are on the spiritual plane all one because we're just energy, right? And we're tricked into this physical experience. So our energy, this energy, has probably experienced everything in the past. So it's possible that because we are connected to it, we could feel this like it was our life. And maybe that is how we learn our lessons. And then
or we channel it.
And we, or we channel it. And then we're here in this exact physical. You all right? Shit.
That was a weird noise. It creeped me out. I'm all right. Sorry.
It's my dragon over here. Calm down, dragon. No, it's funny. It's great.
Lost my train of thought. Go ahead. Keep going.
Anyway, guys, go to morelawsmoreproblems.com. On the click on the oversharing tab. We're just going to run a commercial here to cover it. Wow, look at you. Maybe it was an angel.
Yep.
Go back to our last episode. Angel. Oh, that was crazy.
Oh my gosh. Dude. Yeah. Did you hear a sound?
No.
Did you make a sound? Did something? I heard a sound come through. That was so weird.
Maybe it was my angel speaking to you or telling me to shut up. You're spilling too much beans, it was when, Brandon.
It was when I said channeled. Could it be that it was channeled?
I like it. Yeah, it could. It could totally be that it was channeled. And, you know, so, but what I was saying
before. And it makes me think about epigenetics, too. Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, no. Yeah,
but
go
like,
ahead.
Right? Epigenetics is like, they have no scientists, allegedly, have no way to explain epigenetics because they can do something to some mice, right? And then those mice will have, it'll freak them out. They're afraid of whatever happened to them. Then those mice will have babies that'll have babies. And like generations later, the babies still are afraid of whatever happened to their great, great grandparents because it's in their energy field, perhaps, could it be? Because it wasn't in their genes. They didn't find it in their genetic code. It's just somehow made its way through without passing through the DNA, allegedly, whatever DNA is.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like it could all be related.
It could all be related. And what that means is now you could fit in the people who have this idea that we only live one life and the people that have this idea that we reincarnate. It overlaps and there's a mesh and it kind of makes sense where there are these two camps fighting, you know, and it, they're
fight about that.
And the truth is somewhere in the middle, speaking mm-hmm. of truth. Right. So yeah, no, that's great. And I feel like that is what maybe is how this happens. So that those past lives of the people that came down before us are somehow still a part of us. And we feel that maybe we did live that in some way because our energy and our consciousness did live through that. But now in this particular incarnation, especially because we have this veil of forgetfulness, so we can't directly consciously experience those past experiences or have knowledge of them or whatever, know them truly, right? We just have this unconscious knowing of them. So because of that, now we have a chance to take everything that happened before us and we have a way to conquer it in a new way. We get like a fresh slate to go into the world to build upon that unconscious knowledge. And the only way we could really feel it is internally, right? It's an intuition that guides us because of all the things that happened in the past. So you guys don't have to argue about reincarnation or not anymore. We just solved it. Thank you guys very much. All right. That's the end of our show. No, I'm just kidding. Now back to your regular scheduled programming. Yeah. So I think that's what I wanted to say on the woodshop episode, but anyway, I digress back to truth. Yeah. So physical and spiritual truth, right? So like you could say, yeah, this stove is hot. And you could touch it in the physical and, you know, and you get the knowing that it's hot. Right. And that's something that's a little different. But I like what you said, though, about the whole memory thing, because I think that plays into this perfectly. It's just another way. If you shift it a little bit, you could see how truth is very slippery. And I think what happens is people get attached to their truth and then they have this internal truth and they want it to be everybody else's truth. And that's when the bickering and arguing and all that stuff could start, or the insecurity, you know?
Yeah. When we were talking about this before the show about like my truth versus your truth, we were talking about how could it be that this is applicable in the spiritual realm? Like, because in the physical realm, like you can have objective truth. Like you said, this stove is 100 degrees. Well, by the standards that we've created called whatever, Kelvin, Celsius, whatever, Fahrenheit, you could say, yes, it's a, this stove is 150 degrees Fahrenheit or whatever. Right. So you can have those like standards of measurement and stuff like that. And you can call that that. But in the spiritual realm, it's not so cut and dry, right? So anyway, you take it away.
Take it away, Brandon. No, yeah, you're right. Exactly. It really isn't as so cut and dry. And that's why it's so nuanced. And we're just, you know, attempting to explain what we think it could be. We're not like making claims, right? That's why we always say that, because we really don't know. There's some things we don't know. We might have a good picture of it, but the example we were going to use is in the physical reality, in the physical, how there's no objective truth is murder, right? So in the physical realm, it's wrong to do murder. It goes against the golden rule. In the spiritual realm, though, we don't know God's plan. Now, again, this isn't like a justification for you to go out and murder somebody now, listener, over Sharonite slave. No.
But if you're observing, let's say you're observing that a murder.
We're just observing it. You see something happen and you're like, that's evil. That's totally evil what happened, right? But the thing is, in the spiritual realm, we don't know God's plan. You know, maybe.
Right. And hold on. Let me just interject too.
Please
that
do.
People will say, not only is the situation evil, but they will say that man is evil for doing that, right? When that man is just experiencing what that man is experiencing, and like, who are you to judge? Like Jesus didn't judge that man for murder, because he didn't judge sinners and murderers and women who were, what did he call them?
Prostitutes?
Street women. Yeah, prostitutes.
Streetwalkers. You
know? He hung out with them type
of thing.
So anyway, sorry, I had to just throw that in there.
How dare you, Jesus? No, thank you for that. That was amazing. I love when you interrupt. You always have a great nugget of wisdom to share. You don't have to. It's the Oversharing show. You don't have to apologize for oversharing, right? Yeah. So going back to the example of murder. So you see a murder occur. But in the spiritual realm, we don't know God's plan. Maybe there's a reason that consciousness had to experience A, committing that murder, and then the other consciousness had to experience getting murdered to later set something right that we don't understand. You know, maybe the person they killed was going to go on to kill more people. You can even look at it that way. I mean, that's kind of not always true, but not that that's just a justification for murder, everybody. Again, we're just saying, as an observer sitting back, so this way you don't have to feel like a victim. You don't have to point fingers and think everybody's evil. We're not saying that you go out and have breakfast with this murderer guy and make him your hero. Not at all. You could still, on the physical realm, keep your distance, set up your boundaries, and you know, even fight back if this person's coming at you. But what we're saying is, since we are mere physical beings in this incarnation and in this realm, we can't grasp the scope of the creator and his whole plan of everything that's going on. And this kind of reminds me, like, when I was in the, you know, I wish I could go back to little Brandon in the born again Christian speaking tongues thing. And because people would say, you know, why did God have to kill my dad, or why did he have to take my cousin, or whatever it was? And I never felt that, and I could never fully enunciate that. And I always thought, I'm like, well, God doesn't really kill people. He kind of just set everything up and then everything just happens. You know, he's like a casual observer, I guess you could say, on the side of his own creation. I mean, I don't know if I said that right. But anyway, I was kind of looking at it in that way. And now we're able, years later, to break it down on the Oversharing show. So thank you, Sharon. But yeah, so we don't know, right? We don't know the whole plan of God. So,
And could it be that person who died that their children or their spouse or whatever had to experience that to learn something else. Right.
And go on to do greater things, like that right. lady that we heard about that was terribly had these bad things happen to her. And, you know, she had things done against her will sexually, like a gang rape thing happened. And then she turned around to make this whole foundation for women that could come and get help and all this stuff. So she was able to turn her negative experience into this overwhelming positive experience. Because if you think about it, it is all just energy. Even when people say something too negative or do something too bad or give you their attention, which I think is the ultimate form of energy in this realm, is our attention. So whenever they give you your attention, if it's a bad thing, you could take that energy and somehow transmute it.
Jinx.
Jinx. You could transmute it and use the true alchemy to turn it into something better. So that's what we mean when we talk about truth. And if there is objective truth or I don't know if I'm saying that right, but if there is an eternal truth or not. And I think what happens is a lot of different religions and movements, such as the New Age, which we're going to talk about next. Somehow these truths, they're like half truths that are embedded in there. Like Christianity, for example, the story of Jesus. I said it last week with Nick, good old Woodshop. I was like, you know, the story of Jesus is this perfect
example.
Exactly, on how to guide your behavior in your life. But other people have used it for control, you know. And we don't have to beat that horse, because everybody knows if they're watching what we're talking about. So anyway, the New Age, though, we should focus on that, because moral relativism is something that falls into this New Age trap. And I think what happens is they're confusing the physical with the spiritual. It's inverted. So in the New Age movement, they'll say all the same things we're saying, you know, everything's perfect. Look at the Tao, talks about if you'd like to change the world, I don't think it could be done. The world is perfect. If you tamper with it, you'll ruin it. Something like that.
We mean that spiritually. I think that's what the Tao meant.
Yeah, it's talking probably spiritually. And then people in the New Age movement, maybe some nefarious figures, maybe they did it on purpose. Maybe it was an accident, but they took these truths and they tried to apply to the physical realm and hide them, kind of like inject them in the physical realm. Where, and then what happens in the New Age is, and I know this happened to me when I came across this stuff, because it was great. I was meditating all the time and I was really able to cultivate this connection to my intuition. But I think after a while I started to meditate too long. And I would just let things go. And I wasn't really working on myself anymore, because I was like, oh, it's all perfect. It's fine. We'll just let it go.
And then it was an egoic thing too, probably. I'm meditating. At least I'm meditating. You're not.
Yeah, 100%. And I was like, everybody needs to meditate. It's going to cure the world. I was trying to get everybody to meditate, where, I mean, in this society, it might be true that a lot of people need to meditate. It could help you a lot. But again, I was like, this is what I found. And I'm making, you know, I was like an evangelist. And I was like, it's going to save the world. Well, you know, we can't always bat 1,000, right? I mean, sometimes. So I think that's exactly what the New Age does. And they use the same terms that we would use, the same words, even some of the symbolism. And it just gets, people get confused, and then they just like quit their job and they sit home all day, or they just keep going to like meditation retreat after meditation retreat, and they keep doing that and they go too far in that realm, and then they become, they stop evolving, their consciousness stops elevating. There you go. Their consciousness doesn't rise anymore because they get stuck at this plateau. And I feel like that's a trap for anybody to look out for. If you're trying to raise your consciousness and that's your goal, is to keep your eye on the prize, right? It's to raise your consciousness and not to
self-work.
Yeah, do self-work, not to get above the pack or to be better than other people because of it. But I mean, I think we really nailed it with that New Age thing, because it's been irking me for a while how to exactly put it into a nice concise package of what the difference of that my cosmology as opposed to the New Age. And I think that's a really concise way to put it. It's like, okay, no, all
say
these
it
things
again. Just
what
to
I t-
put
it just to put a nail in the coffin. Okay, so all these ideas that we talk about, the world's perfect and everything's perfect and stuff, it's on the spiritual realm. We're trying to, when we say this, we're trying to kind of view things as God or the creator would view them, which we can't do. So again, it's unexplainable, but we just aren't being victims internally, right? It always, yeah. It just goes back to that, where in the new age, they'll put all these great ideas we talk about and try to stick it in the physical. And that actually makes people victims, though, you know, because then they'll say, oh, it's everybody else that's doing it. It's all their fault. If everybody else meditated, this world would be perfect. If everybody else knew what I knew and followed the Buddha or whatever, you know, this world would be perfect. Where it's so crazy how it's like genius. It really is this inversion, you know.
Yeah. But, and it makes me think of like, because I will explain things like in this way, and I'll say things like, it doesn't matter. And now with that new lens of like, it's in the spiritual realm, it now makes more sense to me why it doesn't matter. So like in the physical, you can't really say it doesn't matter so easily, because things matter, because what is matter? And I credit my dear friend Spoons with this, because one time she sent in at one of our group chats, she sent an audio message to everybody saying she was pondering about the word matter, and how when you say it matters or it doesn't matter, what does that mean? And she realized that matter is also matter. It's something that weighs something, right? It's matter because it has a weight to it, right? So if there's weight to it, that's what makes it matter, right? But in the spiritual realm, you don't have matter, do you?
No.
You're just energy. You're a being of light, right? So you don't have that. Anyway, sorry, that was just my little tangent.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think we did talk about that when we were making the notes. And shout out to our beautiful friend Spoons, that beautiful human soul. There you go. I don't want to say human. Because I love the way that she sees things. It's really great. And she's a powerful asset for us here on the Oversharing Show. She's one of the, you know, we have plenty of people that we're friends with that are like we used to talk about
behind
this a lot
the
more.
Scenes.
There's a lot of behind the scenes people that are just killing it. And I'd like to give a shout also
to our show.
Contribute to our show. And I'd like to give a shout out to our friend Joe, who's been on the show before, because he just gave us a nice little monetary donation. Every time he does, from time to time, he gives us a little bit of money, which is really grateful. We're really grateful for it. And it's much, much appreciated. And if you'd like to do the same, you can go to morelawsmoreproblems.com. Click on that Oversharing tab. And there's several ways you could support us financially if you'd like. PayPal, Zelle, Cash App, Venmo. I mean, you could mail me something. I've had other people mail me. Actually, I just got a letter from Lore, and I got to check it out. She sent me a calendar that she made, and I haven't looked at the letter yet because I got it.
I need to go check my mailbox. I think I have something in there.
Yeah, so thank you so much, Lore. You know, there's so many people that contribute to make us the Oversharing Show and what we are. So that's another reason not to put us on a pedestal, because people that just watch the show casually and stuff, they don't realize the work in the group behind us that's standing behind us. We're just the face of this, right? It doesn't mean we're all of this. We're just the face of what people get to see. So yeah, thank you guys so much. But anywho, exactly, matter doesn't matter. So
so in the spiritual realm, I like to look at it like, I ask the question, okay, what would God do about this situation? We could also say, what would Jesus do? I think that's why that phrase became very popular, right? What would Jesus do? But when Jesus is looking at a situation, he's not looking at the physical. Otherwise, he wouldn't have hung out with sinners, you know? So he's looking at it from the spiritual. He's looking at the intentions of your heart. He's looking at you deeply as a spiritual being, right? So when you say it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, to me, sorry, when I say it doesn't matter, I mean it in the spiritual sense. Because in the grand scheme of things, if I think to myself, if I were God and I were looking at all this and I see these two beings and one of them murders the other one, what would a parent do? right? If he said he has two children, like people, this happens all the time, right? Where a parent has like two children and one of them maybe murders the other one or something, right? On accident or maybe whatever, it doesn't matter, right? They
enable.
Right. And how did those parents look down at their children? Did they say, I hate this one because he murdered the other one? No, you have to put boundaries. Yeah. I mean, Cain had to move out because they were like, no, that you ain't going to do that again. Right. But they didn't, a parent isn't going to have hate for their children. A true parent spiritually can't have hate for their children for that. Right. You have to look at it as from a God perspective. God loves all of us, every single last one of you, even if you're a sinner, right? So how, if God were to look at that situation, he wouldn't be like, well, I hate the murderer and I'm going to send him to hell. And this other one who got murdered is going to heaven. Like, that's not how God would look at things, right? So I always think to myself, allegedly, like, how would God look at this situation? And that's why I say it doesn't matter, because those two people were just fulfilling their roles in this lifetime. And I can't put myself as a judge on them. That's why Jesus also said, like, he wasn't going to judge you. He wasn't going to judge you for something. And that's why, because he can't. We're all beautiful, amazing souls. And in that sense, in the spiritual sense, that's how we're all equal. So that's why you can't put people on pedestals, because it doesn't make any sense. Mm. Like, if you were a parent and you have five children, you're not like, oh, I love the second child the best. That's the best kid. I mean, you shouldn't probably. Maybe some people do. I don't know. I don't have children. But of the people that I know, who have the children, they can't do that. They have to show love for each of their children in a way that is special to each one of them, but they're not going to say, I love this one better than the other one.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know. That was also just.
Well, I could add to a little bit, because if you could say that the parent can hate the actions of that child or not agree with them.
That's the physical realm. Right.
In the physical, but then also view them as a person, a spiritual being who had all these circumstances happen to them, which led them to this decision that was terrible that they should have never done, but they could still have empathy for that person. And like you said, yes, they could still establish boundaries and maybe even get them out of their life if they have to, but they don't have to have that internal hate for them, because I think that the hate consumes you. You know, I feel like whatever you actively hate, you're bringing yourself down to the vibration of that, because you're imagining yourself. I'll put it in my own example. If something happens to me and I get upset at somebody, I can imagine myself inflicting harm on them or whatever, and it feels good. And I'm like, yeah, I'd like to do that. You know, like if this guy pisses me off, I could go like key his car or something, you know, something silly. But I think, though, it brings you down to their level and their vibration. And whereas if you act in the physical,
and that's why it's vengeance is mine, saith the Lord.
Exactly. 100%, because we never know the correct punishment that's actually gonna get to that person, that's really gonna affect them in the way that they need to be affected in order to
learn something their choices
and elevate their consciousness. You could even break it down to that. Yeah, good stuff, man. Let's see. So couple other things we want to talk about as far as examples would be, we talked about that. So, but I did want to mention this is like internally versus externally. The external, you could view everything as perfect. There's nothing we can individually fix out there, right? There's nothing we could fix in the world. We can't fix it. But internally, we could do all kinds of work. We could work on ourselves. And really, if you boil that down to its true essence, it's just learning how to not be a victim in situations as they appear to you. And by that way, you're kind of improving the world in a funny way. It's like a funny what's, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but yeah, I just wanted to say that because I think it's really important to put a little pin on this external versus internal versus external thing. I mean, but anyway, another example would be like this 2020 nonsense that we experienced as we record almost exactly 3 years ago. That happened
the day before 311.
Yeah, we're on 310 right now. 3/11/2020, which is 222 months to the day to September 1, 2001. We'll just say that. It's crazy how this realm works, right? But so the people during that, that there's people who covered their smiling faces and then people who refused to cover their smiling faces. And they just had different perceptions of reality. You know, the people who were covering their faces, a lot of them thought they were helping people and they were doing good and they were saving the world and they were doing their part to stop all this crazy stuff that was going on. But then there's other people who had a different perception that realized it was all nonsense. Technically, could it be a tactic of control? You know, you could look at how these things, by covering your smiling face, you're actually not even protecting anybody from your quote unquote germs or viruses, because it goes through it just like mosquitoes go through a fence, right? You know, like a chain link fence. So, but there were just different perceptions, and both people in the physical realm had their own truth. And if you go up against that person and try to argue with them, trying to show them your point of view, they're not going to hear it because they think that they're saving the world and they think that you're going to kill their grandmother. So there's really no way to convince them. The only thing I see that worked for me after a while was to just empathize with these people and to see them as people who are trying to save others. Now, again, it doesn't mean that when I went to a store, I would cover my smiling face to make them feel better. You know, I would still do my thing and confront people if they came up to me and do what I had to do. But I inside didn't hate them anymore. You know, I wasn't like wishing physical bad things to happen or, you know, all this stuff. I just realized, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And if they figure it out, they're going to feel like total retards. Can you still say that on YouTube? So, you know.
And that's I feel like that's the spiritual side, right? Their internal knowing what they think they know, right, is that, oh, this is bad, I'm going to help people by doing this, that, and the other. And your perception is different, right? So that, I feel like that's very spiritual. And the reality of it was, could it be that it was all made up and they were being used as pawns and maybe allegedly controlled or whatnot? Could it be? And that this thing wasn't even real. And even if it were, your body doesn't work that way from what we've come to learn.
Well, we'll just say we haven't seen any evidence to that side of the story so far. There's a lot of claims coming out of that side, but not a lot of evidence.
Yeah. So if somebody says the truth of the matter is that there was no such thing, right? I'm just giving example. That's a physical reality question. And then the spiritual side is that what the people were, their perceptions were, and how they were thinking about those, about how they were doing things.
Yeah.
Sorry if that came out. I don't know if I was saying that correctly, but.
No, I think I got the gist. Yeah, I do it all the time. Don't worry. Obviously you're here, you know. So we also say absolute truth has more to do with principles that govern this realm. So if you want to point to anything as absolute truth, I think we could, but I think it's more of, like you're saying, spiritual things. You know, when stuff gets inverted, absolute truth versus subjective truth. And I, like we were saying before, I think it comes from us trying to perceive everything in this realm as physical when it's not a physical realm. It's technically a spiritual realm. If you zoom into your hand, I mean, any mainstream person will tell you, any mainstream scientist will say it's just molecules and buzzing around. If you keep going further, it's basically just all energy.
Space.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. These are the voyages of the Starship over Sharon. We got the star card in the meeting. We are Starship.
There we go.
You know, when we try to define truth, we're trying to find a physical truth. And if we realize that it's not a physical realm, even though that's what our senses report to us and it manifests as a physical realm, we just don't quite understand it, right? Were you going to say something?
No.
Okay. So we don't understand the realm, thus we can't have a concrete physical truth, right? I guess except the past, right? Things that happen, but then like we said before, people's perception gets screwed up through memory and all these other things. So it really is hard to point to a truth in the physical realm. At least externally. Internally you could, and I guess that's more of the spiritual, but you could tailor your own actions to accord with the spiritual truth, the internal truth that you know, and then it manifests in the physical as a truth. But then again, other people though are perceiving it, so for their perception it might not be true, and that's again what causes a lot of this division, right? But going back to what we were saying about the 2020 nonsense, all the people who were on the other side that were covering their smiling faces internally, they're probably not hearing their intuition as clearly. So they might reach a point where they do and then realize that what they did was wrong, and then their decisions might weigh on them. Things that they did, if would they realize, you know, say they convinced somebody to get an experimental medical serum, and then somebody had a bad time because of it, now they're going to feel guilty. And there's nothing that me or Sharon or, you know, a person could dream up as a revenge, nothing worse than the revenge that God or the realm is going to give you, because now they're going to feel terrible. It might even feel worse than being hit or something. You know, think about if you do something that causes somebody else's death, you're going to feel so guilty about it. You know, it's going to weigh on you terribly. So it's, you know, I love
but
it.
The vengeance is mine. That's where it gets like very airy-fairy, because you yourself said like you could do something wrong by having told someone to go get that experimental medical serum. But if we look at that word wrong and we look at it from, again, the bird's eye, God's perspective, was it wrong? No. It doesn't have a right or wrong.
Yes.
Because the way God sees it, that was part of the plan that was meant to happen. That person could have said no, right? That person could have said, no, I'm not going to do what you tell me.
Of course.
No, I won't do what you tell me.
Yeah, exactly.
Then I'm going to do what you tell me afterwards. Yeah, exactly.
Raging with the machine.
Yes.
Raging for the machine, should be called. No, you're exactly 100% right. And so that's another stage of spiritual growth and development. But if somebody's coming out of this idea or frame of mind where covering their smiling face was the right thing to do, and then they hit the next step and realize that maybe they fell for lies and they realize that they were spreading the propaganda, they're going to feel terrible until they reach that next step. And that feeling terrible is the worst revenge that anybody could plot for somebody. You know, it's better to just let it happen naturally and let God or whatever do it to them, because then hopefully with that terrible feeling they have, they'll keep going, and then they could get to the next level and realize that it is all perfect on that realm. But, you know, also they're going to have the memory of, oh, I better be careful and not tell people what to do anymore, because I, you know, I don't realize the power that I have over people, you know?
So quickly going back to like the topic of like moral relativism and what is right or wrong, right? Again, I feel like it comes from your intentions, right? But like, I just want to like summarize it. Like right or wrong, we have to look at it. If we're talking about it in the, are we talking physical realm or are we talking spiritual realm? In the, you know, in the physical realm, it really goes by intention, I think. And and that's where some people might get bothered or upset. And if somebody were to ask me, for example, was it right or wrong for that guy to tell that woman to take the experimental medical serum? Was it wrong? I can't answer that because I don't know the intention of that person's heart, right? That person knows if they intentionally did it because they knew that that was going to be harmful for the other person and they wanted to have that harm come upon that person, then I can say, yeah, that was wrong because they intended harm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I think that's how you're looking at it spiritually. Now, if you're looking at it physically, you could say, yeah, that was wrong. It caused that person's death and it was terrible. And that person would be right also. So on both levels, you're right. It's just when you confuse.
Yes and no.
Yes and no. Yes and no.
Yeah.
Or like we used to do in the car business, we'd be like, no. Somebody asks you a question like, hey, you want to eat lunch? It's like, no. Exactly. Thank you, Sharon, for summarizing that at the end. I think that was much needed. What we were talking about.
Did you want to talk about the hermetic principles?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. There's guides like the 7 hermetic principles, which are universal truths. They contain truth. If we can find any truth in this realm, it has to do with rules like natural law or the golden rule, etc. Like as above, so below. Cause and effect, polarity, hot versus cold. And that's just like perception, right? Some people are freezing cold when they're outside and some people are fine and they're just warm. And they're like, what are you talking about? It's not cold out here. Or like we people that always fight over the heat. You know, we need to turn up the heat. No, we need to turn it down. It's too hot in here. It's too cold in here. Who's right?
Exactly. Right?
But I think that the 7 hermetic principles, are really a good way to look at some kind of physical truth where it's just like guidelines to this realm, like natural law. If you start living against the golden rule and natural law, yeah, you're going to vibrate to a lower vibration and you're going to attract these negative things. Then they're going to start happening to you. And then the converse is true, which if you start to live in accordance with the golden rule, then you're going to elevate your consciousness and your vibration is going to go up and you're going to attract more positive experiences to you, or, you know, experiences that are going to be better.
Not
for
only
you.
Be healing to yourself, but potentially healing to others as well.
Yeah. And you could look at it in a really simple way too, because if we are just here to elevate our consciousness, then while we're walking the golden rule, we are elevating it. And then if we're not, all these things are going to keep happening to us. It's like going the wrong way down the highway, right? You're just going to be driving down the wrong way and all these cars are going to be coming at you and beeping and hitting you and all this stuff. And it's like swimming upstream. It's going to be a tough trip for you to go on. And then when you start living in accordance with the golden rule, it's more like going with the flow and going with the stream. So let's see, is there anything else with the golden rule? Yeah, I mean, we're basically saying all this stuff in our notes anyway. It's so good that we take these notes, though, because it just ingrained. It's like when you go for a test and you take notes and you study them and stuff, you know, like you don't always exactly say everything that's in the notes, but you're able to express yourself better. I know I'm able to express myself better when we do these notes because we already talk about them and then we could talk about them again. And then we have these epiphanies while we're talking about them, you know, which is great. Yeah. Stuff we didn't even write in the notes.
Yeah, exactly. I guess, like, I don't know if you're ready to put a, you know, pin in it or pin on it or however you want to say it.
Go ahead.
Do you think we're,
yeah, I think we're at about a good stopping point. I was thinking that, and then because you said that, but there is a Bible quote that we have here. I don't know if you wanted to.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go.
Oh, you're the best, Sharon.
So I guess, because a lot of the things we talk about on our show, I think the overall encompassing thing that we talk about is love, which is about non-judgment. It's about like forgiveness and non-judgment, these and compassion. So these are all things that we talk about on the show because of this spiritual thing that we were just talking about, because how does God see this, right? So I have a quote from the Bible in Matthew Matthew 5:43-48, Jesus is talking, and this is the scene where he's talking to, I think he's sitting out by the sea, and he's talking to the people. He's doing the, what is it called? I forgot what it's called. Anyway, there's a famous thing that this is, the section of the Bible is called.
Oh, Sermon on the Mount?
Chapters. Yes, thank you. Sermon on the Mount. Yeah, yeah. So he does the Sermon on the Mount. This is part of the Sermon on the Mount, and it's talking about love. So
Sermon on the Mound.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, Sermon on the Mount. Yeah, you're right. Go with what Sharon says.
I heard Mount. So.
Oh, maybe I did say Mount. Okay. Anyway, yeah, I was thinking Mound. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Sermon on the Mounds. Now I want a candy bar. No.
Yeah. So I want to read this, but we also have, I think we had some notes about like love and what love encompasses, like what the word love means and how in the English language.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like if we want to review that a little bit before I read this quote.
Yeah, totally. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You start. I was going to say,
do you want me to read the quote first?
I'll just say this and then you could read the quote. I think it'll be better because I think the quote's a good thing to end on. And maybe people, having explained this, maybe this will mean something different now to people when they hear the word love. So going back to what we're saying about words and how people have different meanings for words and it creates different pictures in different people's heads. if you go back in history, allegedly, and look at who Cecil Rhodes was, Cecil Rhodes is the guy who basically conquered South Africa for the English, and he got together with all these other people and they're like, hey, you know, we could probably control the whole world. We can do it. And the way we're going to do it is to teach everybody English. We teach everybody English, the English language. And that always kind of baffled my mind. And they talked about a little bit why and some of the stuff I looked into. And they talked about the English language and how it is susceptible to this, right? And that's exactly what happens, because all this division is created because people have different meanings for words, such as love. And it, like I said earlier, it creates a picture in one person's head when you say it, and you have a different picture in your head. So, you know,
and may I interject,
please?
Like we were talking about with, in Greek, we were talking with, gosh darn it, can you remind me his name?
Gabe.
Thank you. We were talking to Gabe about love. Yes, like dissident. Sorry, I'm like trying to think of too many things at once here.
No, I get it.
So we were talking about in Greek how there's many words for love. Well, we don't have that in English. So when you say like, you could be like, I love pizza. Oh my God. I love hamburgers. You know, I just love that guy. He's so amazing. But like, it's just, it's, you can say that, but then when you say it to your loved one, the person that you love, whoever that is, and you say that to them, it has a different nuance. Maybe the energetic vibe is different, right? But the word is still the same. And so when you see it on paper or when you, or even sometimes if you say it, some people may not catch the vibe of what you mean. And especially if they're foreign people who haven't really learned a lot about the language. So they might be like, oh, you love pizza? That, you know what I mean? Like, you love hamburgers that much?
Or like we used to say when we were kids, if you love it, why don't you marry it? Oh, you love pizza? Why don't you marry it, right?
Exactly, exactly.
And that points, and it's funny because it's a saying that kids have, and all, there's so much wisdom in these little sayings, right? And it just points.
And kids are so wise, and we don't necessarily realize how
and we're going to be talking about that soon too, about how we talk to kids. And I realized this last night, how we talk to kids and we're kind of talking to them like we talk to animals, or like how we talk to stupid people. Pets. We talk to kids like they're stupid. Yeah, our pets, you know, it's like. I mean, I think it's okay to talk to pets that way, but when you talk to a little person that way and every adult that they encounter is talking to them like they're stupid, could it have an effect on them? Stay tuned for more on other episodes of Oversharing. We might investigate that.
We might talk about that.
You're like, hey, bud, what are you doing over there? What's going on? Hey, you know, like that, or hey, guy, or like, hi, like we'll say Joe, like if your son's name is Joe. Hey, Joe, what's going on, buddy? What are you doing over there? Or, hey, Joe, how's it going? How's your day today? Did you learn anything? You know, like, I don't know if I'm doing that right, but it's this tone and we don't even freaking realize we're doing it. It's so crazy. But yeah, to what you to comment on what you said about love, I think it's perfect because it goes back to what I said. You have a picture in your head when you see pizza and you're like, I love pizza. And you just mean I love to shove it into my mouth, you know. Or I'll say like, I love pizza. I love to eat it, or hamburgers or whatever. You know, I love that.
Love
feeling
is the short word being used for like, I enjoy this behavior or I enjoy this thing. Could it be?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know,
have words for that.
I have a picture in my head when I'm speaking to my beloved and I tell her that I love her. I have a picture of what I mean, what that means. And then I have a picture in my head when I'm talking to my mom and I say, Mom, I love you. And then my friends, when I tell them I love them, and then like I have this picture in my head of like great camaraderie and like sister, a great sister. And that's why I tell Sharon I love her, because it's this relationship that we have, but it's nothing like a lover relationship. You know what I mean? But we're still saying the same word.
Yes.
You know, but that's what happens when you speak English. So what are we going to demonize the English language and not use it? No, I think we could just elevate our consciousness. That's what I'm going to do anyway, and realize and try to show the intention, and then maybe use other words when I explain it, you know, to people like, oh, I love you like a sister, Sharon, and Mom, you're the best mother I could have ever had. Thank you so much. I love you. And, you know, all these different things. And pizza. Oh, you were always there for me, pizza. Whenever I was feeling down, I could just, you were just one phone call away and I can enjoy my lovely pizza. And I love it all. I love it all, just differently. You know, you get it. Anyway, go ahead, read the Bible quote, Sharon, and we'll stick a pin in this because it's exactly 3:33 here. That's so funny.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, yeah, basically that's what we were talking about when we were talking about love. And I will also say, to add to this, is that what if it's okay to just say love? And why can't we just be okay with just loving everybody? And like, that's okay. Like, it's, there's nothing wrong. Like, but obviously there's different types of love, but don't get all your panties in a bunch. You know what I mean?
That's like, another way the New Age inverted the spiritual and the physical, the free love in the 60s. They totally took, the idea was totally taken from love everybody in the spiritual way.
Smokes.
And inverted to, you got to go out and bang everybody. And so we can have herpes now or whatever.
Yeah. So that's what, so thank you. Because that's what I meant, is like, love everybody in the spiritual, like, because they are your brother or sister in the spiritual realm. But with the forgiveness of like, you know, Father, forgive them what they know not what they do, when they're doing something that you notice is potentially negative or nefarious or something, right? Forgive them, for they know not what they do, but I still love them. That's the unconditional love in the spiritual realm, but it doesn't apply to the physical. Thank you. That was boom.
Yeah, it just means that you don't hate them or have hate for them, like we said earlier, which will just consume you. That's why the Emperor wanted Luke Skywalker to strike him down in anger and kill me with your hate and you would become what I want and all that stuff. You know, that's what they were trying to, well, that's what I got out of it anyway. I don't know what Lucas was thinking, but it came out despite him, I guess, right?
Could it be? So we'll put a pin in it and I'll read this quote from Matthew 5:43-48. And Jesus said, "You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. For he causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward will you have? Don't even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers and sisters, what are you doing out of the ordinary? Don't even the Gentiles do the same? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Sharon. Thank you, guys. Yeah. Shout out to the chat. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. It's our favorite time of the week to hang out with the chat. We love you guys.
In the spiritual realm.
We want to marry all of you. And pizza. We're going to have a crazy polygamy. A
pizza fest.
With pizza.
And hamburgers.
And hamburgers. We're going to have hamburger pizza and we're going to love it. But yeah, thank you guys so much. If you'd like to support us or find more about us, you can go to morelawsmoreproblems.com, the website that I've had for over 10 years. Check out my blog on there while you're there. Also, click on the Oversharing tab and you can get all your Oversharing needs. But as always, we always say the best way to support us is just to, if you can, be here every Thursday night at 8:33 p.m. Eastern Standard Time when we premiere these. And we have a nice little chat going. And also, what else was I? What else do I always say? Oh yeah, that's the best way could support us. And if you can't be here, like, subscribe, share, all that fun stuff. And what do we say to the good people, Sharon?
That once you start over, Sharon,
then you totally stop being a Karen.
That's right.
All right, everybody. Good night. So we'll see you next time. Share and share on. Take care, everybody. Bye.